hear the old Bill Monroe numbers, but they wouldn't dare mention Bill Monroe's name. So they said, let's do the old bluegrass material. And that's how the name evolved around 1953. Well, that's just a name. Who knows what we're really talking about. But that they say that's how the name started, the actual name. Play some of that old bluegrass material, and then it swept like wildfire, because they're referring to the high tenor sound and that syncopated banjo and the man stepping up to the mic. And I generally do mean the man stepping up to the mic and then stepping back, and that in and out stuff, that fancy, real well-rehearsed program music.
Years ago, if you look at country music magazines, or if you look at the Billboard magazines or those kind of industry publications from the late 40s and early 50s, there seems to be a little bit of confusion about, they weren't giving a whole lot of attention to the country music field, and there's all sorts of words. They do use folk some, but they weren't even quite sure what to call Lefty Frizzell and Hank Williams and all those groups. They didn't, the names weren't real clear. Sometimes they were folk music in some of those magazines, they called it. They did call it hillbilly, and it seemed to be what we say country now to mean just anything that's sort of that derivation. I've heard that for hillbilly for everything from Hank Williams back in those days to Bob Wills, even in some cases, although he was much further west and not really part of the Eastern music scene except for one appearance at the Grand Ole Opry, I guess, which was okay, I guess. It was the first introduction of drums on the Grand Ole Opry, as a matter of fact, was Bob Wills' appearance. They didn't have drums at all until he performed the first time. And my feeling is, anyway, that I picked up from the thing, that hillbilly was a general term, although later it kind of went to bluegrass, but bluegrass wound up being any group that kind of sounded like Bill Monroe's group did, which wound up in the 50s being the Osborne Brothers and, of course, Jim and Jesse later, although they really were something else. That's getting even more detailed, but there's Stanley Brothers, the Osbournes, Jimmy Martin's group later, all those groups of the 50s ultimately. And I think it wasn't really until the 60s, till the folk boom really hit strong, that they definitely were calling bluegrass what we know bluegrass is now. It took a while to get that name to stick.
I'd like to ask whoever wants to answer this, what you think the future holds for the continuance of these two very, very interrelated kinds of music existing side by side and retaining their purity, but also keeping the spirit of coexistence at festivals and this sort of thing. When we first started Bluegrass Week here, at that time the only kind of music, of old-time music that we had at Augusta was Appalachian, traditional Appalachian music. And people were very apprehensive as to what would happen. Some people were saying, well, we're going to see motorcycle gangs and things like that in Augusta. You know, I mean, it was really strange reactions that people had, because they had some kind of misconception of what kind of audiences went for bluegrass music and what kinds of people played it. And there was a lot of suspicion, especially of bluegrass musicians by old-time musicians.
All the
bluegrass, not the other direction.
They are suspicious of old time too. Not suspicious, but real disdainful. I mean, there is this antagonism. I can't really answer the future, but one other short lecture of the whole fiddle and left hand variety is the bluegrass bands can play at festivals anywhere in the United States, Maine, New Mexico, Hawaii, Alaska. They'll have what they call a bluegrass festival, and they'll have 8 to 20 bluegrass bands, at least one big name, like Country Gazette. They'll make the people come, and they may do one show, but they'll go, and there'll be a lot of jamming, and there'll be a continuous show, one band after another, and it's this certain society of people, more your camper-type people. They definitely bring lawn chairs, you know. It's social. Now, the old-time music, I think it really just about only has one venue, a new word I've learned, is this old, these fiddlers conventions that I'm so involved in. There's one at least every weekend in the summer, all within about a 100-mile radius of Galax, Virginia, around North Carolina, mostly in Southwest Virginia. It's just a small area. It's the only place where you can see 100 old-time bands. Even there's more. Some, you know, 200 old-time bands in line.
Where can you see 100 bluegrass bands? I don't get the comparison.
Well, at the fiddlers conventions too. The bluegrass bands can play anywhere. They have these things called bluegrass festivals. And then there's this thing, just this one little particular place in Virginia called Fiddler's Conventions, where you have 100 bluegrass bands in line competing and 100 old-time bands in line. And old-time bands will also be, they're also starting to spring up, like they might have a dance in Washington, D.C. and Minneapolis, and a clog team goes along with an old-time band, too. Now, this is just one kind of old-time music I'm talking about, string band old-time music. There's so much more. There's this Carter family and ballads and.
What about fiddle tunes in Washington State?
Yeah, I think that it's a lot more spread than you're describing.
I think it's more spread out.
I think old time music, that level of old time music is spread out a lot more.
Tell them about it.
Well, it is. I go to festivals all over the continent, and there are always old time bands at those festivals, and there are always groups of old-time musicians hanging around those old-time bands who play in those towns. And there's not a wimpy little once-in-a-while dance in Washington, D.C. There's an every Sunday night big contingency of people who like this kind of music and come dance to it and play it. And that's true in many, many other big cities. I really think that it's a much more appreciated and spread art and expression form than the description of a 100-mile radius in Floyd, Virginia.
But do you see it do you see it having the same being appreciated by the same people, both kinds of music? Do you see more of a tradition bringing them together?
The biggest difference
or bringing them together?
That I see happening to old-time music now that the older generation of people are really leaving us fast is that regional styles are disappearing fast, and now the same people who play here go to Galax and play, they travel hundreds of miles to Florida and up and down the East Coast all over to play, and the same tunes get spread around, the same versions of tunes. So real fast, regional styles are leaving. I don't know if there was ever, regional bluegrass styles, or has it all been pretty well?
I think since it started on the radio, and you could say that radio and records were the destroyer of regional styles in the Southern Appalachians. As soon as you could hear how somebody else played the banjo two states over because you heard it on the radio or record, you'd start changing your style because they're on the radio and you're not and you want to be. And so you play like them. And so, you know, I'm not sure that any of us, since radio has been around since the 20s, I'm not sure any of us, even the older of us, have heard unaffected old-time music by nobody. You know, it was never recorded, so we don't know what that is. Something I wanted to mention, being from the West, I would say bluegrass is there because, as was mentioned, the bluegrass festivals are there and there's a way for bluegrass music to grow. I would say the presence of old-time music in any event that I can go to and be exposed to it, if I'm not exposed to it, is almost negligible. Other than in some of the larger cities, there are Celtic music societies, there are old-time music societies, maybe in Houston, Dallas, Oklahoma City perhaps, but not so much. But the traditional music that maybe the kids learn and pass down that we have is the Texas fiddle tradition. And that's a very strong tradition. There are fiddle contests every weekend, just about through the summer season. And there, they have a disdain of bluegrass players. They don't want to see a banjo. That's not what they're about. They have a whole set of rules for their setting, which is many, many guitars, and only one fiddler plays at a time, and all the other fiddlers play guitar while that fiddler's playing until he plays his set. and this is under the trees, and when he's through, you don't take breaks like in bluegrass. You don't play them together in unison like you might do in old time. You play by yourself until you're played out, and then you put your fiddle down, and you get the guitar up, and the next fiddler plays for a month. And that's just the tradition that they have there. And it's very active and alive, and throughout the West, there's the National Old Time Fiddle Association, and a lot of those. A complaint that I saw a number of years ago is that they were afraid that because of the National Old Time Fiddle Association, so many Texas players were winning, that they were afraid that all the regional styles were really suffering. Cape Breton, all the various, the Appalachian styles weren't winning the contest. I think they had too many judges from who were fans of the Texas style. And so I think there's been a conscious effort in the national contest in the last few years to try to get a more representative body so that if you are a great Cape Breton style player, you got a chance at winning this contest, which is national old time. And yet that's a whole nother area, I guess, but it does, I hope, illustrate that in other places in the country, Southern Appalachian folk music may not have a big impact, but there are these other traditions that are happening in those areas. Gosh, I took a
Any other questions?
I'm basically a bluegrass fan at heart. I don't know a lot about old time, but I guess maybe that's one of the reasons I'm here, is to learn a little bit more. I'd like to hear from some of the panel people, where is the blues context that we sort of associate with bluegrass that I don't hear in the old time? Maybe it's there and I don't hear it, or maybe it's not supposed to be there. Monroe sort of drew on some of the old black gospel and the bluesy feel and injected part of that. Nashville Bluegrass Band have been sort of significant in emphasizing that in their sets.
I think if you listen to the brother duets of the 30s, you hear a lot of blues. And if there's two camps, bluegrassers claim those people, I think.
Yeah.
But I think old-time people claim those people, too.
We
I mean, maybe that's our common ground, is we both, you know, if the most, the hardest bluegrasser that hates old time music, if there is that character, and I think several people have said he's around, if he hates Gid Tanner, he probably likes the Morris Brothers. He probably likes the Monroe Brothers, the Blue Sky Boys, all these groups. And I think some of those groups had a lot of blues to what they were up to. So it's not exclusive. I think it was there. And it exists in old time, and as Tracy mentioned, that if we keep locking in on those of us who aren't old time players, if we keep thinking, well, old time is Gid Tanner or one of those groups, then immediately you say, well, there's no blues in that, or there's not much, or whatever. But when we think about the full range of what it is, and Jimmy Rogers is the first country music star, according to some sources, but he's also surely an expression of old-time music as well. And, of course, his legacy, none of us have escaped. We're all products of Jimmy Rogers, I think.
If by blues you mean a black influence, even Gid Tanner and the Skillet-Lickers, it's all full of black music. All the lyrics are all black verses. I mean, not all, but I mean a good portion of. And all the standard old-time tunes, Liza Jane and all these things, they all came from black people.
And I think, I'm sorry,
go ahead.
You find it not only in the vocal traditions, but remember that old-time music is not defined strictly and entirely by old-time string band dance tunes. And that there are, you know, 70 different ways that people tune an old-time banjo, who may sit and personally play on their front porch. And if you listen to old-time banjo players like Roscoe Holcomb or Doc Boggs, you're gonna hear the blues and what they play. I agree with Joe that a tremendous amount of that blues and old-time music is in the vocal tradition, but also in the instrumental traditions before the time that this music became so homogenous. I mean, the truth for me is I find it disappointing that there is such a energetic conglomeration of people who are strictly interested in one geographical aspect of old-time string band music.
Except
and that's what's
so
spread.
Satisfying.
Well, it's wonderful music, and bluegrass is very satisfying too. But those people are as hard-headed and hog-headed about other kinds of string band or blue or old-time music as these bluegrass people are about listening to string bands. You know, and you have to look at the whole picture. Jimmy Rogers was a blues singer. Doc Boggs did incredible blues stuff on the banjo. So did Roscoe Holcomb. And because of the homogenization of what we as people are doing with our music, those styles are falling out. You're hearing them less and less.
I think it'd be good to ask Tracy to say a little bit about how Cajun music, a real old-time music, if there ever, American music, if there ever was one, has a bigger tradition as these other things, and how that kind of, how it has moved along in comparison to what we call old-time music, bluegrass.
It's kind of parallel. I consider Cajun music definitely a Southern U.S., Southern American music, very much influenced by a lot of the same material that bluegrass has been influenced by. Very, very similar story all down the line. Lots of black influence, blues. The whole thing is, it's just that the lyrics are done in French. They call it French music down there because the lyrics almost always are sung in French. There's certain things about it that are a little bit different, but not really, it's a very parallel type of situation. No, I forgot what I was going to say.
I think it's very interesting, though, that there are so many opportunities now for people to hear all these regional styles and to learn from one another. And I remember having the thrill of visiting Dewey Balfa at his home. And he took out his fiddle, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. Dewey's going to be playing all my favorite Cajun tunes. And all he wanted to do was to play was tunes that he learned from Tommy Jarrell. He played one Tommy Jarrell tune after another. It was his idea of fun. And these things are happening because of these folk festivals, which are comparatively recent happening. And also there are festivals at which, like Augusta, or festivals like Cajun and Bluegrass festivals, old-time Bluegrass festivals, and we're seeing people who are hearing all of these influences, and who knows where it'll lead and what kind of music is going to result from that another generation on down the line.
Although that's so parallel to what Jerry was describing earlier, where in the 20s and 30s, when radio and records first happened, an old-time player who really initially played for their own and perhaps their family's personal satisfaction and entertainment would hear an old-time musician from down the road that they never heard before who played just a little different and became interested in that style, and that's what they did. I mean, that in some ways, that's the same way that we lost a lot of our styles regionally. Although, of course, we're not nervous that Dewey's going to forget Cajun music. But it brings up an interesting point of people who are learning multi-stylistically, because, for instance, I've got a real good friend from California who learned how to play bluegrass music on fiddle really, really well, and then he took up Irish music. Well, when I listen to him play, to me he sounds like an Irish musician who took up bluegrass music, and when his Irish friends listen to him play, they think he's got way too much bluegrass in his playing. You know, when I hear him play Irish music, it doesn't sound like bluegrass to me at all, and they think it's totally pure, and now he's got all these different styles in his head, and it really comes out as his music combined with these two different styles. I think what we're going to see more and more, because so many people like a lot of different styles, is we're going to see more and more crossover in future years, and less I'm strictly studying this kind.
Well, perhaps the answer is that none of this music really is pure. It's all music that's developed out of other styles and other influences, and none of it has sprung entire just as it is. It's all come from other sources. It's all folk music, and it could all be derived really in the same way, except there's that speeding up process because of the radio.
I was going to make a point that I just made. My own personal experiences is listening to my grandfather play, who back in the days when he learned, they might not have had radio or phonographs or records. And I asked him one day where he learned those songs, and he said from his father. So maybe they are, like you say, just being passed down, which he never did anything with his music except I played guitar behind him. So I was familiar with fiddle tunes. So maybe it is just being passed down, and added on to, and the styles changed. Maybe it's all traditional. Maybe bluegrass, old time. It all comes from the same roots. He was full-blood Norwegian. His father was full-blood Norwegian, so maybe they all came from Norway.
I might ask about what you think perhaps the influence of the movies and television is on what we think music is. You know, if you go back to the wagon tracks,
it's way too
banjo playing Old Susanna, you know, that's the kind of music. And then you got Bonnie and Clyde with the automobile, with the you know, bluegrass sound and so on. Do you think that there is a pattern set there visually to categorize as what we think those scenarios should be, either regionally or in scope of nationally? I feel I was influenced as a city boy from Detroit greatly by the kind of music I saw in the old B class of movies, you know, the Western movies. And as things progressed on, you know, you become associated with what bluegrass sound is. I'm just curious about what you think movies might have had by association to those categories.
I would be interested, of course there are obvious bluegrass examples in movies, but I would be interested if there are any movies that have used any old time music to good
Paper
advantage.
Make one.
That would be a great movie.
Say again.
Paper Moon.
Old time music for years.
Yeah.
Didn't see it.
Oh, and you know what? That movie Raising Arizona has great old time banjo all the way through it. I was very jealous of the guy who got that job.
I think that, you know, I don't have any, although it may portray my music, whatever my music is, in a light that I might not be happy about. Any success, if it does bring, you know, any success, however commercial it may be and wrong, and will in its path pull along things that work out pretty good. So if you have a movie that has Open Back Frailing Banjo in it that's just a monster hit, and people like that sound, ultimately you're going to have a good number of people who look into it, always a small percentage that actually might buy a record with that kind of music on it, a smaller percentage that might actually want to buy a banjo like that and take a lesson from Kathy on how to do it. But it does ultimately help us all, and we might be able to get a gig out of it a little better. We identified a number of years ago that John Travolta was personally responsible for two major music moves. The Urban Cowboy movie, which did all that, you know what they did, and Saturday Night Fever, which did all that. And we have been just trying to figure out how we could get John Travolta to do the Earl Scruggs story. That would do it. That's, apparently he's in control of American music taste.
There's no question that
he could do the Dave Macon story.
I think a lot of people who've never heard bluegrass and have no idea what it is still know the doing banjos from Deliverance. And if you try to point that out as an example, they immediately know what you're talking about.
Although it's interesting because I do a tremendous number of school programs for young children, elementary schools. And for many years, when I would pull out my banjo to start my program, those kids would look at me funny. And they would laugh at me. And I realized very quickly that their image of someone who plays banjo is stupid hillbilly, probably somebody who has a cement pond in their backyard. And that my job was not strictly to entertain them, but my job was to get them over this bad image they had of a banjo player and what, how intelligent a banjo player can be. That's my job. I have to explain this to them. This is not a nice job. And it took me, you know, many, many performances to figure out how I was going to get over that hump. You don't have that so much with the younger kids, like kindergarten to third grade, fourth through sixth grade, where they're already self-conscious enough about what the heck they're listening to and looking at and being part of. It's really a trick to get them to look at the banjo as a musical instrument that they can appreciate, that they may someday want to play, that they can go home and tell the parents they heard something really cool. I mean, that is a real trick because of these images that the media has presented about the banjo, and I think it's one of the things, at the same time as I think Joe's right, you pull some people along with the tide when these great things happen. Look at the great things that have happened to the banjo. The people who play banjo are not portrayed as very bright. They're not portrayed as having potential to live in the real world, you know. Well, that's why we have Alan here. But I think that's an important thing, because here we are, all people interested in seeing these traditions live in some way, and we have got some very important hurdles to help younger people get over to think that this is a really cool thing.
Well, you know, I think the banjo is a poor example in the sense that the banjo throughout its history has always been portrayed in the hands of the less intelligent. And I think probably not till Earl Scruggs was it on a mass level raised to a level of public awareness. I mean, it was used in the minstrel shows by comedians and whatnot. So it's tough. And the TVs and movies have not entirely helped. There have been things that have helped it, but you say you got interested in it because of that, so that's a plus there, you know.
Perhaps we can have one more question, Greg.
Speaking to someone who's come in mainly from old time music, it seems to me that bluegrass music requires more technical mastery on the part of the players, and maybe is more difficult for a lot of people to participate in. But I'm wondering, after what you said, Jerry, that it seems to you like folk music in West Virginia, the living folk music is really bluegrass. I'm wondering, are there changes taking place in bluegrass music that are making it more accessible to more people, easier to play?
I would say that in bluegrass, there certainly is a emphasis on virtuoso style playing, but not every player that plays bluegrass is virtuoso. There are all levels of performance. I think the same range exists in the old time music I have heard. If you think about just in the banjo, the drop thumb style, claw hammer, incredibly intricate and a difficult style to play cleanly, precisely, and there are some great players of that style. It takes a lot of study and practice. And so I think the ceiling on how good can you be for this kind of music is unlimited for any country style. Most people, especially since this is not a music, neither one of these musics anymore is a music of performers on stage for money by the large amount. It's people who just play and they're part-time for fun. And so most of those people are not going to be virtuosos. And so I would say at the average, if there's an average bluegrass festival, you'll see a level of competence in a bluegrass festival that would be somewhat comparable to the level of competence at an old-time music festival, if there were such a thing. That would be my impression. Any other comments?
Marco, could I say something? This distinction between sort of the polarization between bluegrass and...
He's both. He's both. He's
both.
Easy, easy.
I just found out from whatever Kathy said. music, and bluegrass was a natural sort of progression, kind of a stylistic progression out of bluegrass. I see bluegrass musicians there who have tremendous respect for old-time musicians, and old-time musicians who have respect for bluegrass, and even maybe even a little bit of indie. These are the older people who play old-time and don't consider that they play bluegrass, but maybe they like it sometimes. I mean, this is like, it's kind of like old-time music is old-time music. It's not. It's old-time, and a lot of people don't think it won't be old-time. You know, bluegrass is sort of the modern music. But I think people do make distinctions as to good music and bad music. If people, you know, if people play bluegrass badly, then, you know, even the old-time is going to play like that. If people play old-time music badly, then bluegrass music is going to play like that. So it's just good and bad music. And I think you got to be careful. I mean, I used to be in the old-time band, and we used to talk bad about bluegrass music, and then we'd get someplace to play. Yeah.
Well, I think we've had a lot of things to think about, and hope this has stirred up a lot more conversation. We'll hear buzzing about it all over. Yes?
We belong to the South Florida Bluegrass Association, my wife and I, and we preserve and protect bluegrass and what we call old-time mountain music, both types of things. The purpose of it, of course, is to keep electronic out. That's our bag.
Okay, and let's not have a whole new
we have been in this since 1971, the South Florida Bluegrass Association. And you said something about the gentleman.